Ripley will take us back to the events of that day 10 years ago. Then Steve Murphy and the WCCO News team will look at how and why our world has changed since. You'll hear from real people on this very surreal day. Minnesota remembers 9/11. Today at noon on News Radio 830 WCCO. WCCO, remembering September 11th on 8:30 a.m. and 102.9 FM. WLTE HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
It's a beautiful day out there. Temperature reading at 79 right now in the Twin Cities, heading for a high of 88. A summary of local news after CBS right here on WCCO.
Nominated for the Marconi Award for Large Market Radio Station of the Year. News Radio 830 WCCO, WCCO HD, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
CBS News, I'm Steve Kathan at Ground Zero in New York, where ceremonies marking 10 years since the 9/11 attacks are coming to a close.
Sandy Ayala.
A day where families paid tribute to their lost loved ones. Many are now lingering at the new memorial. Huge pools, names etched in bronze, and trees planted in a green space where the towers once stood. My colleague Heather Bosch.
They tell me it shows respect for those who died. It marks the final resting place for many whose remains were not recovered.
Bells and moments of silence mark key moments on that awful day a decade ago. President Obama was here with a biblical reading.
God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear.
I'm Jim Crisul in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The President and First Lady have spent the past hour here at the newly dedicated Flight 93 National Memorial. They laid a wreath near and strolled along the so-called Wall of Names, 40 marble slabs, each inscribed with the name of someone killed here 10 years ago. The two also greeted family members of the Flight 93 heroes. The plane knifed into the ground 60 miles southeast of Pittsburgh as the passengers and crew fought to regain control of from their four hijackers.
I'm Cammie McCormick at the Pentagon. A moment of silence and bells to honor the victims here. And this being the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta also honored the fighting men and women who have been involved in the war since.
We pledge to never forget the enemy that made this happen, why we fight them, and why we will never stop fighting them.
More than 6,000 Americans have died in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
News Radio 830 WCCO looks back 10 years ago to the day that changed America as well as the upper Midwest. Minnesota remembers 9/11. Here's WCCO's Dave Lee.
Today marks the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. The day a decade ago when a plane that slammed into the World Trade Center out of a brilliantly clear blue September sky began a day of horror that changed our nation and the world forever. CBS News led with a headline at 8 o'clock our time while we were on the radio.
CBS News, I'm Nick Young. A disaster in downtown New York City. A plane has crashed into one of the two World Trade Center towers.
Then the second plane came slamming into the other tower and chaos ensued. Here at WCCO Radio, we watched the TV monitors and went to live coverage from WCBS Radio as the tragedy unfolded on the streets of Lower Manhattan. The confusion of that time was shared by everyone, including those at the highest levels of our government.
I have never heard such a gasp of astonishment as I heard speaking to the FBI headquarters this morning when they saw what we saw, the explosion at the World Trade Center, the second explosion, and the smoke coming out of it. It reminded me and them of Oklahoma City. There's pure astonishment, I can tell you, at FBI headquarters this morning, and they are trying to find out the facts just as we are.
New York's police and firemen were in for the fight of their lives, trying to save victims at the World Trade Center.
Somebody gave an urgent, and next thing we know, we're just dragging some people. I came down with two guys. I was shaving my mask with two other guys. And we just made it out. Then we made it out here. The tower blew.
Another plane crash into the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. added to the terror.
An Associated Press reporter in the area of the Pentagon did see the tail end of a large airliner, that's the way he put it, plunge into the Pentagon. So right now there are three fires, two in New York in the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, the third at the Pentagon, that's the United States Defense Department, on the Virginia side of the Potomac River in the Washington, D.C. area.
Governor Mark Dayton was a U.S. Senator 10 years ago and shared this recollection of that morning on WCCO in the nation's capital.
I was in Washington on my way to work at the Russell Senate office building. We were just kitty corner from the Capitol. It was a beautiful Tuesday morning in Washington, and I knew something was wrong when the basement, there's a coffee shop, and there's a TV in the corner for the line, and people weren't queued up to get coffee. They were clustered around the television, and at that point, the first plane had struck the World Trade Tower, and I skipped the coffee, went up to my office, and my chief of staff and I were watching, and at first you thought maybe this is a, you know, somebody had a heart attack in a small plane or something, and then right in front of us, the second plane crashed into the second World Trade Tower, and there was this horrible, just incredible, unbelievable feeling that, you know, this was not an accident, this was an attack. And just a few minutes after that, from the kitty corner of the building I occupied, Russell Senate building, you could see the black mushroom cloud coming out of from the Pentagon where that had been struck. And Mrs. Bush was just around the corner in Senator Kennedy's office from my office, so they were going to have a hearing at 10 o'clock on the library bill, and first they got on television saying they were going to go ahead with it, and about 2 minutes later we heard the Secret Service was evacuating her, and they obviously realized the scope of what was going on. So about a minute later, the warning sounded for everybody to evacuate the Capitol, and it was just unbelievable. I went over to I was living in the hotel just a couple blocks away. I went back, and the general manager asked if I wanted to go up on the roof, so we went up to the roof. It was about a 10-story building, and totally clear day except for this huge mushroom cloud coming out of the Pentagon, and not a plane or a helicopter in the sky, which is very unusual because they shut down Reagan Airport, and suddenly these two F-16 fighter planes came streaking down the mall about 500 feet over the Capitol, and it was just like, this is unreal, this is just a nightmare, wake up, but it was all too real.
We will never forget the sacrifice of the passengers on Flight 93, including Bloomington native Tom Burnett. They stopped the hijackers from doing further damage and crashed into a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Then in Lower Manhattan, the stricken towers came crashing down. This afternoon, we remember the victims and the heroes from 10 years ago. Later this hour, we'll share the story of a retired Port Authority policeman who watched that morning from his home in Plymouth, Minnesota. He had been in charge of security for the World Trade Center after the 1993 bombing and trained many of those officers who lost their lives in that tragedy. There's a 10-year memorial event being held this afternoon at the state capitol starting at 2 o'clock. If you're out, Minnesota Council of Churches Executive Director Peg Chamberlain shared some details with us.
I think this is going to be a broad statewide opportunity to remember, to honor, and to heal. We want to remember those who died on 9/11. We want to honor those who served and sacrificed, and we want to come together as a community to heal and move forward. It's really designed to reflect Minnesota's strength in diversity. It's led by faith leaders of many traditions, along with civic and political leaders of all persuasions, and we're going to all stand together with people of Minnesota to share our common need to remember. This state is really a great state, and we came together 10 years ago in huge numbers, and we think it's a chance to do that again.
Today, the National September 11th Memorial is officially opening when family members are able to go in to view it as part of the 10th anniversary ceremonies. It'll be open to the public the next day. Named Reflecting Absence, the memorial features two large square waterfalls in the footprints of where the Twin Towers stood, with the water cascading from street level down into a void. The names of the 2,983 victims, including those killed in New York, the Pentagon, Shanksville, and in the 1993 World Trade Center attack, are etched into bronze panels around the falls. Hundreds of swamp white oak trees have been planted on the plaza surrounding the waterfalls and will eventually form a canopy overhead. Port Authority Captain and Medal of Valor winner Paul Brady joins me when we return on WCCO Radio.
More of Minnesota Remembers 9/11 after this on News Radio 830 WCCO. You're listening to Minnesota Remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Dave Lee here with a friend and someone who experienced 9/11 very close and personal level. His name is Paul Brady. Paul is a retired New York Port Authority policeman. We first met him shortly after 9/11, as a matter of fact, when he had moved out here to Minnesota from New York and had retired just prior to this event. Paul was very instrumental in helping a lot of people back in 1993 when the World Trade Center was bombed the first time. And in fact, he was awarded a 1993 Medal of Valor for his work in the aftermath of that Trade Center bombing. Paul, appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining us on CCO.
Always good to be with you, Dave.
Paul, let's, if we can go back to 1993. The World Trade Center was bombed the first time. There you were. You got the call. You were on duty. Can you take us back through that time a little bit?
Sure. I remember it well. It was a snowy, cold day in February, the 26th of February, and it was right around lunchtime. And the job actually came in as a Con Ed transformer exploding beneath the World Trade Center. And if you don't know, underneath the World Trade Center is a whole system of subway trains and what have you. So it wouldn't be uncommon for big transformers to be down there. And we arrived there. It was smoke billowing from the building, and we, you know, when you get there, you see people in trouble, and you go and you help them. And that's exactly what we did. We entered the building, and I went in with four or five other guys, and off we went to find people and get them out.
When did you realize it was a bomb?
I ran into a friend of mine who was an ATF agent, and right in the lobby, and he said to me, "Hey, this isn't a transformer. This is a bomb. You could taste the nitrate in the air."
Wow. And the people that were involved, you found out who they were?
Well, yeah. We know that Ramzi Youssef and Mohammed Salamad, the blind cleric Rahman, and the funny part about it is, not funny, but the unusual part about it is the whole thing was financed by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. So these guys were all involved in hating America from way back.
You go in there, you don't have, I wouldn't imagine at this point, Paul, you have any kind of real basis for thinking it's a bomb or how to treat that, but as a result of what you guys did, they learned some lessons later on, didn't they?
We learned a lot of lessons on what we saw that day, and we saw the stairwells and the elevator banks fill with smoke, and they actually acted like chimneys, and because of that, it was difficult for people to navigate their way down these stairwells and to escape. We also found out on the 44th floor of the Sky Lobby, we found a bunch of handicapped people who were unable to evacuate the building and literally had to carry them down in various forms. Now, as a result of that, we changed our high-angle rope rescue methods. We changed, with the engineers, we changed the ventilation in the building so that the stairwells and the elevator banks would not become chimneys. And it therefore facilitated a quicker and a safer evacuation for 9/11.
Yeah, so in the wake of the tragedy of all the lives lost, there were people that got out of there thanks to those thoughts and those guidelines that went in.
I sure hope so, and I believe that they did. And plus the fact that we knew about this now. Before, in 1993, nobody had a dream anybody was going to bomb the World Trade Center. We had gotten a memo on it about 3 years prior from the International Police Association, and who had told us that there was some kind of chatter about harming the World Trade Center. But you get that all the time, and nobody really paid that much attention to it until it happened.
And you and I've chatted about this before, but you go into that building, and you just have to react to the situation because it was happening right now.
It was very emergent. When you went in, people were running out. back in those days, the smoke was very, very thick. We ended up, the group that I was with, being sent down to the lower levels. And I remember being on the B4 level, four levels below the ground, finding a group of people that found their way in from a parking garage. And they were just covered with smoke and soot, and they were cut. And we ended up escorting people out through various ways. And you'd go down some ways, and walls would be down. You'd have to turn around and go back and find another way out. So it was really a reactionary time for everybody. And then, like I said, you know, when we got done with that, we got sent up to the 44th floor. And then when we got done with that, we got sent up to the roof and worked our way down. And it was really, when you sat back and looked at it, we said, something's got to change. There's too many people in these buildings, so you've got to be able to get them out faster.
We'll talk more with Paul Brady here, a former New York Port Authority policeman with us on WCCO, when we return after this.
Minnesota Remembers 9/11 continues in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. This is Minnesota Remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Dave Lee here with our friend Paul Brady, the former Port Authority cop in New York City, whose efforts in disaster training at the towers back in 93 when they had that bombing there probably saved many lives on September 11th, and he joins us. Paul, unfortunately, you lost a lot of friends on 9/11.
I did. As a matter of fact, the 37 police officers that died, I had a part in training them in one way or another, so I knew them all. Tony Infante, who was my classmate and very good friend for many, many years, died on that day as well.
10 years later now, as everybody talks about it and you hear about all the memorials, your thoughts?
You know, I remember going to the first memorial back in 2002, and I remember one cop, an old-timer, saying, you know, it won't be long before they turn this into a political stage, and it'll be who's invited and who isn't and all this stuff. And I said, no, that'll never happen. And I was wrong. They certainly have seemed to have done that this year, and that's a little sad. But my thoughts on that are that these are not the kind of people that need an invitation. If these folks want to go there, they will go there, and no one's going to say a word to them. And it's not about being invited. We weren't invited on 9/11 either, but we went down there and did the job.
Osama bin Laden, where were you when you heard the news of that, and what was your reaction? Because you certainly were familiar with him, having gone through this bombing in 93.
Sure. We've known about Osama bin Laden for many, many years as a facilitator of terrorism. His father was a billionaire construction, owned a construction company in Saudi Arabia, and they financed many of these terrorist jobs of the bombing of the embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. Just to mention a few. When he was killed, I was quite happy, to be honest with you. I thought that was a justifiable end to a person who had caused so much harm and so much difficulty for so many people. So I wasn't saddened by that at all. And I wasn't surprised that it was a very big effort between CIA and Defense Intelligence and the SEALs, SEAL Team 6, you know. And these guys went in and did a great job and took out a very bad man.
Have you been back to see any of the construction and where the towers were?
I've been back over the years a number of times to see them, yes.
And your thoughts?
It's a spectacular building. It's quite impressive, and the reflection pools are very tranquil. I think that, they're going to build it to 1,776 feet for the 1776, you know, for our great country. And I think it's going to be a great building when it's finished, and it's going to have a lot of personality, and it's going to make a lot of people feel good about what we're doing.
It affected the entire nation, but that's where you grew up. That has to be doubly difficult for you.
Well, it is. Many, many people, and when you go back east, so many people were affected, and people seem to forget about, you know, people thinking about, the first responders and this and all that. But, you know, I've often thought about, what about all these kids that lost a mom or a dad or both? People who lost a husband or a wife, a coworker, you know, relatives. The impact is so far spreading, it's amazing. You drive down to Garden State Parkway in Jersey, all the overpasses still are decorated with American flags. This is 10 years, and they've been like that from day one.
What will you do today?
Today, when I leave here, I'm going to go exercise because it'll relieve the stress from this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about it a lot. Especially this week is a very difficult week for me mm-hmm. and for everybody else that was involved in that. And even more so, I think about my friends. I think about those that I knew. And, I look back at so many people. And I remember arriving at the scene, and there were two young cops leaning against a radio car. And I knew both of them. They had worked for me. And as I walked up, they stood at attention. And I said, you don't have to do that anymore. I'm retired. You can call me Paul, as a matter of fact. And I said to them, geez, I'm glad you guys are okay. It's good to see you. And then one cop had tears in his eyes. And he said, you know why we're okay, boys? Because when we got here, there were so many people jumping that you couldn't get into the building.
Hmm.
He said, you couldn't get in. And he said, I stood there and I felt useless because I didn't know how to get in to help anybody. And I thought, geez, that's a pretty big statement.
Yeah, it sure is. Go ahead, Paul.
I was just thinking that, among all the people that you remember, I remember when I retired, the person that replaced me was Kathy Mazza. She was a former emergency room nurse, and she used to suffer from what she used to call IWS. And I'm thinking, what the heck could that be? She said, Italian woman syndrome. And what that meant was whenever she made food at home, she would always make an extra bag and bring it into work. She just couldn't help taking care of people, and she died. And I remember, when you get there, you would go into a staging area, and you'd have to sign in so that your, on-job benefits would cover you during the recovery work. And I walked down this hall, and at the end of the hall, this fellow, Bill Hoover, I'll never forget him, a nice fellow. And he says, well, look at this. If it isn't Captain Brady from Montana. I said, no, Minnesota. He goes, yeah, one of those M states. I knew it was one of the M states. But if that was, that's what you miss. You miss that camaraderie, closeness, you form a very, very special bond with these folks over the years. And you know what they're going to do and when they're going to do it. And you know that you can count on them. And that's really a big, big part of it.
Well, you've been a big part of relating all this information to us through the years since we met over 10 years ago now. And always good to see you, Paul. And, of course, you were a sergeant in 93 and ended up retiring as a captain and came here to Minnesota. We're lucky to have you, but appreciate you sharing your thoughts here on a very, very special day for a lot of people. But really, I know very, very, very difficult for yourself. So thanks for sharing those thoughts, Paul.
I sure do appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to get this information out to people in hopes that they'll understand a little bit more about what went on.
He is Paul Brady, and as I mentioned earlier, he was awarded that 1993 Medal of Valor for his work in the aftermath of the Trade Center bombing back in 93, but it was his efforts, and he'll be humble about it, but very, very instrumental in disaster training at the towers, and probably saved many lives on September 11th. Our thanks to our good friend Paul Brady for joining us.
More of Minnesota Remembers 9/11 after this on News Radio 830 WCCO.
84 degrees at WCCO. Let's go to CBS.
CBS News Update. I'm Gary Nahn. A day of tributes and reflection 10 years after the 9/11 attacks in New York. Singer James Taylor.
So close your eyes.
During a reading of the names of the victims, Talat Hamdani remembered her son Salman, an EMT and police cadet.
You rushed into the burning towers to rescue humanity and transcended the barriers of race, faith, and ethnicity, and gave the ultimate sacrifice.
I'm Cammie McCormick at the Pentagon. On a warm, sunny day, families of the victims gathered at the Pentagon Memorial near the benches representing their loved ones. Vice President Joe Biden said al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden underestimated American resolve post 9/11, and Defense Secretary Leon Panetta paid tribute to the troops lost in the war since.
150 miles northwest of the Pentagon, a bell signaled a moment of silence for the victims who died in Shanksville, Pennsylvania on Flight 93. CBS News Update, I'm Gary Nahn.
You're listening to Minnesota Remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO. Here's Dave Lee.
We are talking with a documentary filmmaker who was a ground zero with New York firefighters on 9/11. Gideon O'Day. Gideon, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, I appreciate your time here. 9/11, 10 years later, will be on CBS television. Very powerful on this 10th anniversary of the attack on the World Trade Center. But let's set the stage again for folks. Let's talk about this, which also features two-time Academy Award winner Robert De Niro as the host of the program. But Gideon, take us back to the beginning, how this whole thing transpired for you and what you ended up catching on film.
Well, strangely, this whole project, this documentary, started just 4 months prior to 9/11, when my brother Jules and her partner James started filming in a firehouse just 8 blocks away from the World Trade Center. And the idea originally was to follow a young probie firefighter, fresh from the academy, joining his first firehouse and following for his first 9 months, his probationary 9 months, basically the time it takes for a young probie to prove to himself and to the rest of the firehouse that he has what it takes to, you know, that he's a man and he has what it takes to be a firefighter. And unfortunately, 4 months into the filming, that dreadful day happened. And Jules, my brother, basically were out on that morning. It was really the last call. We're out with a firefighter and Chief Pfeiffer on an order of gas just a few blocks away from the World Trade Center when they all heard this roaring noise flying above their head, and just had time to look up and see the American airline plane flying above them. And Jules happened to be the only one filming the plane hitting the North Tower. And then Jules continue on with all the firefighters from this house, and were among the first one to arrive inside the North Tower, and he never stopped filming. And so that's why this documentary is now really about the first responders inside the World Trade Center, as it has never seen before. And then you will discover those incredible firefighter 10 years later, which is today, and discover how they process this entire event and how they move on with their lives.
This filming, by the way, has won some prestigious awards, but the George Foster Peabody Award probably speaks higher than any, the Edward Murrow Award, and on the list goes. How many people do you suppose have seen this through the years?
Well, thanks to CBS, who's been a tremendous ally and support on this film, we know that over 66 million people have watched this film when it first aired in 2002. And then it was aired all over the world simultaneously three times already, twice actually, and was aired in 103 countries. So who knows, maybe 500 million.
Wow. So you moved to New York City from Paris in 1989. You go to the New York University Film School, so you obviously know the city pretty well. But what inspired you in the first place to decide to do a documentary on this young firefighter?
Oh, a kid's dream. I don't know a single kid out there who has not wished at one point in his young life but to imagine and to dream being fantasize being a firefighter is just one of those things when you're a boy, I guess. And and just to be around those guys that for me are like, you know, modern Superman. Just to be able to be in a firehouse and jump in the truck whenever the ring bell and see firsthand what those guys do every day, not only in New York, but absolutely everywhere around the country. That's remarkable. That's a privilege.
Gideon O'Day is with us. You have, as your program host, a two-time Academy Award winner, Robert De Niro. Tell me how he got involved with this documentary.
Well, Mr. De Niro was really fantastic, because when he agreed to really introduce, present the film in such a way that the audience, when it was first released, would not be too scared of watching it. There was a slight controversy about the film when it aired on CBS 6 months after the attack, that no one knew exactly what they were going to see on those images. Some are pretty tough and violent, but Robert De Niro agreeing to present the film kind of made people realize that it was not going to be a gory film to watch, and that's something that we were so careful about doing, make sure we were respectful to all the families that lost loved one. And we thought De Niro was going to do that very well.
Thank you, Gideon. Have a good day.
You too.
Gideon Nodei, along with his brothers, you mentioned Jules and James Hanlon, presenting 9/11 10 years later, an update of that critically acclaimed, multiple award-winning film, 9/11, on this 10th anniversary of the attack of the World Trade Center.
Minnesota remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO. Is Minnesota Remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Jeff McKinney was afternoon anchor and editor at WCCO Radio on September 11, 2001. He was working out that morning and knew immediately he would have to come in early.
I found out about what was happening in New York while on a treadmill at the gym. One of the towers had been hit, and I and everyone around me was watching television at the gym. Everybody was assuming it was just a terrible accident. And then the second plane hit, and it was clear that this was an attack. This was no accident whatsoever. And so I quickly disembarked from the treadmill and made my way down to the station. I was supposed to be in at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so I was there several hours early and was on the air.
We have explosions, crashes in New York, in Washington, two very high.
One of the first things I recall about being on the air was that right after I sat down, the skies across the United States were clear. They had grounded officially. This probably had happened well before it became public knowledge, but all the planes were cleared out of the United States airspace for the first time in anybody's memory. All the planes in the United States of America were grounded.
We are now learning that the FAA is shutting down all takeoffs anywhere in the country. No planes can take off anywhere in the United States.
For me, it was clear that something very, very despicable that hadn't happened before in the United States had happened and was happening. But it was unclear that thousands of people were going to die. It was unclear that these towers were actually going to collapse. It was unclear just what kind of calamity was at hand. But the one thing that brought home to me that we were under attack was that the United States of America lost all of its air transportation. Every plane in the country was told to find an airport, the nearest airport, and put down. And for me, that was a projection of the scale of what had happened.
That's what I was going to ask you. So when you sit down to, you know, start anchoring, I mean, you pretty much already realize that this is a day of days.
You realize it's a day of days. You realize that an attack has been launched, a specific kind of attack, has been launched against the United States. The Twin Towers in Lower Manhattan, emblematic of the fiscal economic might of the United States, those Twin Towers are targeted. As I said before, it was unclear just how large the loss of life was going to be, but the intent of the attack and the Hollywood nature of the attack was something that brought home that this was a day of days, this was something that hadn't happened before, and this was something that, if it harked back to anything in our collective memories, whether we were there or not, it harked back to Pearl Harbor. For me, I thought about Pearl Harbor right away, because it just so happens that my mother was at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. Her dad was in the Navy, and she was living there above Pearl, in the hills above Pearl. So I'd always heard about Pearl Harbor. And instantly when this happened, I began to think about Pearl Harbor, and I guess thousands of people across the United States did as well. So yes, as you say, a day of days, it was something that hadn't happened before, and it was clear that whatever was happening was happening on an unprecedented scale.
And we were covering it locally as best we could because we did have things going on here. We've got the Mall of America, obviously, here that was evacuated, if I remember correctly. We had the IDS Tower, the tallest building in Minneapolis, being evacuated.
Yes, we have several buildings in downtown Minneapolis that have been evacuated, most notably the IDS Tower, the tallest building in downtown Minneapolis, the Wells Fargo Tower, nearly that tall, the Baker Building, Catty Corner, to W.
Looking back on it now, it seems almost silly to think that we would have been part of that attack. But at the time, I remember it was just... You had no idea what the scope of the attacks would be.
Just because we're not New York and we're not Washington doesn't mean today that we're immune from attack. Thus, we have these evacuations.
No, yeah, I don't think it's silly even looking back on it because it was unclear if there were cells in cities all across the United States going after well-known and well-populated targets. So in Minneapolis, certainly the Mall of America, which is the biggest mall in the United States, gets a lot of press and is always full of thousands of people. I don't think it was wrong then, and I don't think it's wrong now to have evacuated that place, and I don't think it was wrong for the press to have focused on that as a possibility that an attack might be coming to Mall of America or the IDS.
Al Malmberg was the overnight voice you heard on WCCO radio for many years, including 2001. Al's show was often a chance for night owls, third shifters, and people who just couldn't sleep to express what was on their minds. And that's what they did on the night of September 11th. Due to his schedule, Al would sleep during the morning hours. He was sleeping on the morning of September 11th when his sons woke him up.
What a bizarre way to be woken up with the son telling you that the country is being attacked, and being in a deep sleep and trying to comprehend what the heck was going on. It was just really bizarre. And then waking up and turning the TV on in the bedroom and seeing the replays of everything that had happened that morning, because they woke me up probably about 10:30 our time. Another thing that I remember, Adam, is driving into downtown Minneapolis that night, getting into work at about 11:30, quarter to 12. The entrances, all the entrances going into downtown Minneapolis, there were police cars there, and they were checking out. They weren't stopping you, but they were eyeballing every car that was coming into the downtown area. You know, there was a concern in major cities all over the country that these attacks would continue, and so they were looking at vehicles that were coming in, primarily vans and that type of vehicle. It was an eerie feeling doing that. And you know, when we got in there, when we went on the air, the lines were already jammed up. People. The listeners wanted to talk about this. It was something that they had gone from shock. Many were still in shock. Many had gone to anger. But the one thing that I really remember about taking calls all that night was the unity. Politics didn't come into play at all. It was never even mentioned. You know, it didn't make any difference what party you supported or didn't support. Everybody, we were all Americans. And that's the one thing that really stands out in my mind of all the calls that we took that night. And for the rest of that week, it was really something. We were all Americans. It was a night that I will never forget. I mean, it's a day that none of us will ever forget.
Al Malmberg now hosts a morning show on KCOL Radio in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Minnesota remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO. Minnesota remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Prayer for our fallen brothers and sisters. There's a blood-red circle on the cold, dark ground, and the rain is falling down. The church door's thrown open. I can hear the organ song, but the congregation's gone. My city of ruin. Now with the...
Remembering September 11th, 2001. News Radio 830 WCCO and WCCO HD, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
CBS News, I'm Gary Nunn. 3,652 days and counting since the 9/11 terrorist attacks. 10 years, the nation and the world remembering, reflecting, and paying tribute, including ceremonies today in New York at Ground Zero, the Pentagon in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Time has not diminished the praise for those aboard United Flight 93 who fought their hijackers.
I respect these heroes, and that's what they were. They were the first ones to stop terrorism in our borders.
They were heroes, you know, who knows what would have happened if they hadn't acted, and just they had no thoughts for themselves.
The 40 passengers and crew of Flight 93 are being lauded for inspiring a new generation of Americans. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
I'm Cammie McCormick at the Pentagon. On a warm, sunny day, families of the victims gathered at the Pentagon Memorial near the benches representing their loved ones. Vice President Joe Biden said Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden underestimated American resolve post 9/11, and Defense Secretary Leon Panetta paid tribute to the troops lost in the war since.
I'm Steve Knight at Ground Zero.
2,983 innocent men, women, and children.
New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. President Obama quoted scripture in his brief remarks. It was his second visit here. But he didn't mention the milestone that brought him here 4 months ago, the killing of attack mastermind Osama bin Laden by American commandos.
Jeffrey Donald Bittner.
Steve Knight, CBS News, New York.
In Cedar Falls, Iowa today, students, faculty, and local residents gathered at the University of Northern Iowa to pay tribute by planting flags on the campus, one for each victim of the attacks.
News Radio 830 WCCO looks back 10 years ago to the day that changed America, as well as the Upper Midwest. Minnesota remembers 9/11. Here's WCCO's Steve Murphy.
We continue our news coverage with a story of hope that began on September 11th, 2001. Twin Cities mother Debbie Maleka was at Fairview Hospital in Edina, giving birth to her daughter Megan as the attacks began. WCCO's Bruce Hagovic talked to Debbie and her now 10-year-old daughter about how it has affected their lives.
It was about 8:30 o'clock in the morning. I went into the delivery room. I was in labor. And as I was in labor, I remember hearing the doctors and nurses talking over me, and they were talking about how in New York and one of the Twin Towers had been hit by an airplane.
We are now looking at flames shooting out of the north side of number one World Trade Center, but there are at least some windows blown out and smoke billowing out of the opposite side.
I remember hearing them talk about people jumping out of the windows and whatnot, and they thought it, you know, they thought it was an accident that this airplane had crashed into it. So I was just kind of, you know, that's what I heard about it. And then Megan was born. She was born at 8:55 that morning. And then we went into the recovery room, and as we were in the recovery room, then the doctors and nurses came in and they continued to talk about the plane crashing into the tower, but now they had talked about that another plane had crashed into another tower and that both towers had been hit.
An Associated Press reporter in the area of the Pentagon did see the tail end of a large airliner, that's the way he put it, plunge into the Pentagon.
It was very mixed emotion time for me because I was just had this, you know, just had a baby, so it was a very, very, very special time. And I was, you know, my husband and I and family were extremely happy. But yet we were hearing all this stuff going on about these attacks. Well, then, you know, after it was announced that they were attacks, and we had all these mixed emotions about, you know, these attacks going on and these people dying. And but yet we had just, you know, had a baby. So that was tough. And as I was in the, then I went to my room in the hospital, and my parents and in-laws and friends and relatives were coming to see me, and they would come in and they would be pretty upset but pretty happy on the same side. You know, they were happy, they were upset, they were happy because, you know, Megan was born, but yet they were upset because of the tower attacks. When I went back into the hospital room, I remember looking out the window that morning, and there wasn't a plane in the sky. She was born, Megan was born in Edina Hospital, and Edina Fairview, hospital, and I looked out the window, and I remember it was a completely clear blue sky that day, and there wasn't a plane in the sky. So you have just the most joyous time of your life. You have a joyous event going on in your life, and then you have on the other end a very tragic event going on. So it was a lot of ups and downs.
What do you know about what your mother's talking about here? She's talking about the day you were born 10 years ago, and we had this attack on America at the same time. Have you talked about that at home? Are you aware of what happened on that day when you were born?
Well, I sort of know what happened, but not really.
What do you know about what happened?
Well, I only know that, like, these two people, like, crashed these towers when I was being born.
And have you heard much, is it something you think about very often, or don't you really even think about it?
I don't think about it that much.
Now, when you have your birthday every year, it's going to be another anniversary of that attack. So do you think that you'll always kind of remember that there was an attack on your birthday?
Sometimes I do.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the people we know bring it up, like family, or when we meet new people, or when someone says, oh, when's your birthday? And you say, oh, 9/11, or it gets close to the day, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, birthday's coming. Oh, you're a 9/11 baby. So, you know, it gets brought up that way.
Do you mind it when people bring that up and say, oh, your birthday's on that famous date?
No, I'm just kind of a little popular on that day.
You're a little popular on that day? You mean more popular or less popular?
Like, more popular.
You're more popular because people say, hey, your birthday's on an important date in American history.
Yeah.
So do you like that?
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of like that extra attention that you get.
Sure.
How are you going to celebrate Megan's birthday this year now?
Well, it's on Sunday, and we're going to have family and friends over, and we're hoping for a nice day so that we can be outside and celebrate with family and friends.
Do you think there'll be any talk about 9/11 on that day?
I don't think there will be, because I think that everybody wants to just keep it a fun, positive, joyous day and focus on Megan.
Some local residents were on the streets of New York when that frightening day began. WCCO's Susie Jones spoke with one Minneapolis resident who was there.
It was pandemonium. People were very confused. No one could believe their eyes.
Kit Borgman is forever changed after seeing firsthand the death and destruction September 11, 2001, at the site of the World Trade Center bombing.
You can imagine. I mean, this is America. You're not used to seeing something like this. We saw people leaping from the windows.
She was in New York City visiting a friend who was battling cancer, and a neighbor called to tell them the planes had hit the towers. They went outside.
Dust was awful.
They were evacuated and told to move north, away from the towers.
We were luckily running away from in the opposite direction. The wind was blowing the other way, so we escaped the cloud by literally a foot.
Kit will be in New York City on the 10th anniversary to be part of the memorial.
It's going to bring back lots of memories. I'm going to be with friends that had gone through the same experience. It's going to be heartrending, beautiful, sad.
She says her life has changed because of the tragic events.
Suddenly you realize just how brief it is, and how you just never know what tomorrow is going to bring. One minute everything can be fine, the next minute it can be completely blown apart.
Susie Jones, WCCO.
More of Minnesota Remembers 9/11 after this on News Radio 830 WCCO. Listening to Minnesota Remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Murphy. Thank you for joining WCCO for 9/11 Minnesota Remembers. The 9/11 terror attacks have changed the way Twin Cities fire departments investigate and the way security is conducted at big gathering places like shopping malls. WCCO's Edgar Linares reports.
Before September 11th, the words terror threat were not part of firefighters' vocabulary.
I think what really changed was an awareness that
of terrorism.
Before September 11th, the Mall of America didn't need a state-of-the-art security system.
We have well over 300 cameras out there now, just in the common areas.
Some say on September 11th, America's innocence was shattered.
So you have no idea right
other
now?
Other than another one, another plane just hit. Right? Oh, my God. Another plane has just hit. It hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion.
So where are we heading up, Mr. Campbell?
We're going to the 53rd floor.
Okay.
Top of the building, top occupiable floor.
The Capella Tower is one of the tallest buildings in Minnesota. It's filled with thousands of employees from Capella University and a number of law firms. As each tenant moves in, they're educated on threat protocol. General Manager Ted Campbell.
Most buildings of this caliber will have a full-time security presence on staff.
After 9/11, training for fire drills became secondary.
Evacuation now centers around threats.
What to do when there's a bomb threat or a man with a gun in the building? That's the training their staff is focused on.
Here in downtown Minneapolis, security staff in buildings communicate using radios. They also work with police and fire and hold meetings with Homeland Security. They never did this before 9/11. Minneapolis Deputy Fire Chief Todd Steinberg.
You know, we still respond to high-rise buildings the same way. We still, you know, go to our residential fires. But I think what really changed was an awareness of terrorism.
Steinelber says since the attacks, whenever they investigate a suspicious fire, they look at the bigger picture. Could it be terror-related?
After 9/11, there was a lot of emphasis on weapons of mass destruction training and awareness level training and, you know, recognizing when things are out of place.
And here at the Mall of America, that kind of training has been taken a step further. The mall doesn't have your average mall cop walking around. Doug Reynolds is director of security. He recalls on September 11th, this mall didn't open.
We had a short window. It was about a 20-minute window where we had to decide, hey, are we going to open today or not? And we chose not to open that day.
Since then, the mall has made permanent changes to its security system, adding hundreds of cameras. Deliveries are thoroughly inspected, almost like crossing a border. They have trained staff looking for things out of the ordinary, and canine units walk the halls.
They are single-purpose explosive detection dogs, and we have three canine teams on staff. We're starting up a fourth team, actually, very shortly.
Their security staff are trained in Krav Maga, the Israeli self-defense program. In addition to their uniformed personnel, they also have plain clothes officers patrolling, but they're not looking for shoplifters.
The folks that are out there doing that, that's what they focus on. They don't focus on shoplifting. They don't focus on anything like that. Looking for people's lost cars, that's not what they focus on. Full-time, they look for suspicious persons, vehicles, and objects.
In 2008, Reynolds was asked to speak to the president and the Department of Homeland Security on securing a venue. For the thousands who patrol our cities and the places we visit, life got more complicated after the attacks, but our cities are safer. Edgar Linares, WCCO.
Then we have our airports. Life changed quickly the second planes were used as weapons of mass destruction. Here's Samantha Smith.
Tim Anderson is the Metropolitan Airports Commission's Deputy Executive Director of Operations. He and several colleagues were in his Minneapolis office when the first plane hit the World Trade Center. At first, he says they didn't think too much of it.
Sort of poo-pooed it at that time, thinking the first crash could be a Cessna hitting one of the towers or a high building out in New York, coming through the clouds or whatever.
But it was when the second plane hit that they knew it was serious.
Later on, finding out it was more than that, became evident we had a real problem on our hands.
There were two primary tasks MSP security teams had to deal with, informing passengers that all flights had been canceled and prepare for the landing of additional planes that otherwise wouldn't have stopped in Minnesota. Overall, Anderson says things went quite smoothly considering the circumstances.
So we were playing in a playbook that was something we'd never tested before, obviously. We were learning as we went along.
And things haven't been the same since.
Boy, what has not changed? It's more, I think, that question, because personally, everything has changed. The life we knew it at the time is no longer the life we know it.
Are we safer now in 2011 than we were in 2001?
Oh, absolutely. And to say we're safer is, I think, really easy to say, because we have created very strong, very hardened facilities at airports.
Though it takes a little longer to get through airport security now, Anderson says travelers continue to cooperate.
For the most part, the public has been extraordinarily understanding of virtually every humiliation we can put them through.
Anderson says they'll never be done improving security, but the steps the FAA and TSA are now making continue to move things in the right direction.
Instead of painting everyone with the same brush or treating us all the same, identifying who they really need to concentrate on, and instead of working on keeping all bad objects off of aircraft, working on keeping bad people off of aircraft.
And a decade later, as we thank them for their work, Anderson says the public's help has been appreciated as well.
We in the airport security business and in the TSA security business owe an awful lot to the traveling public for their patience with us as we start to struggle through a better system for them.
Samantha Smith, WCC.
More of Minnesota Remembers 9/11 after this on News Radio 830 WCCO. This is Minnesota Remembers 9/11 on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day?
I'm Steve Murphy. Do you remember where you were on September 11th, 2001? Edgar Linares spoke with a teacher and his student.
The first plane struck the World Trade Center at 8:46 a.m. Eastern Time. CBS News came on the air with breaking news. Then at 9:02...
Right, oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit. Right? Oh, my God. Another plane has just hit. It hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion.
Clayton Jackson was starting his first grade year that week. He's now a senior at Washburn High School.
What do you remember from September 11th?
I didn't really hear back in what it happened back in 2001. I really didn't know what it was.
The attacks on September 11th are something Clayton can barely remember. It wasn't until a number of years later that he realized the major impact 9/11 had on the U.S.
I see it as just like more higher security for our safety and concern.
But for Clayton's teacher, Dan Forstner, the memories of that day are still fresh in his mind. He was teaching middle school in St. Paul, but his thoughts were with his friends in New York. As a matter of fact, Forstner used to teach in New York.
My classroom faced the World Trade Center, and I was there during the 93 bomb.
Forstner says on 9/11, his school in St. Paul decided to conduct class as normal and turn the televisions off. At the same time, some of his former co-workers in New York were being evacuated.
One kindergarten child looked up and said, "Look, teacher, the birds are on fire." And the child was actually seeing people jumping out.
Many can't shake those kinds of images. Clayton says September 11th was a turning point for the U.S. when it comes to securing our country.
I think it was just like a time that when like America had just got too comfortable. And then like somebody like just took a shot at it just to let us know that we were still at risk. Like, don't get too comfortable.
Edgar Linares, WCCO.
An estimated 150,000 Muslims have lived in Minnesota following 9/11. Bruce Hagovic met a young Muslim mother who says life hasn't always been easy.
How do you reconcile your Muslim religion with the Muslim terrorists? You obviously must separate the two.
Absolutely. I have nothing to do with them. You know, it's simple to me. My religion does not say to do the things that these people did. And I don't believe that anybody would actually want to do those things. They were out of their minds. That's how I reconcile it, because I can't believe that any human being in their right mind would want to do those crazy acts. I mean, I remember watching people, you know, when the towers fell, it was horrific and it was scary and there were so many emotions. And, you know, there's nobody that can watch somebody jumping out of a building and not feel some sense of fear. And why would that happen? There's no reason that anybody would do that to another human being.
Heidi Cater grew up in the Twin Cities as a Muslim, but says she doesn't look Muslim. She doesn't wear a veil, but her mother does. And Heidi believes that veil has resulted in subtle, if not overt, discrimination. She recalls store clerks passing over her mother at checkout counters.
And, you know, when somebody is rude, that's when I kind of call them out on it and say, well, you know, we need to talk to your manager. Or the person will direct all their conversation to me and completely ignore my mother, who's probably been living here longer than they've been alive. And has fabulous control of the English language. So
they would pass over your mother,
yes,
because she looked Muslim.
Yes. They would just outright ignore her. You know, it's like you're looking through a person like they don't exist. That, you know, I'm standing right next to her, but the conversation, she'll ask a question to the salesperson, and that person won't even respond to her. She'll respond to me. And I would several times say, my mom's the one who asked the question. You can respond to her.
Overall, she sees Minnesota as a very welcoming place, a model that other areas should follow. But 9/11 did bring changes.
My parents' generation put a lot of effort into making sure that the life that I was going to be living is, you know, free of discrimination. And so they did a lot to make sure that the image was good, and they put a lot of work into just living a good, noble, positive lifestyle. And that was kind of the face of Islam until 9/11 happened. And then all of a sudden, we're back at square one, and I'm having to deal with all the discrimination stuff that my parents had to deal with, and I'm having the same... You know, I need to go through the same amount of work or the same amount of effort to make sure that my kids don't go through what I'm now going through.
Heidi defends her Muslim faith.
You know, we focus on community and being good to your neighbor and taking care of your family. You know, one of the greatest things that you can do as a Muslim is take care of your family, your parents. You should never, ever, in the Quran it says you should never say uff to your parent, which means you should never huff and puff. Don't slam a door in their face. Be kind to your parents and love them. You know, that's one of the greatest things that you can do, taking care of your children. Who has time for all this other stuff when you're taking care of your family, really? So it's about community, and it's about loving one another and being kind, regardless of if it's a Muslim or a non-Muslim. That's not how it is. We're all supposed to be part of one fabric. We're humans.
And what about the future for her young children?
There will be small things along the way that make people have harsh feelings again, and we'll have to continue to get discrimination out of our society. But I think they'll have a good life here. I really do.
Bruce Honkovic, WCCO.